Greetings, everyone. This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to my Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. And you're about to hear my recorded interview with international best-selling author, Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Enjoy.
This is Brother Bedford from howtobeablackentrepreneur.com, and joining me today in conversation is Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, one of the great black minds in the world today. He is an educator, an author, a professor, a lecturer, and a researcher. Dr. Kimbrough is universally characterized as one of the most insightful and scholarly writers in the field today. His honors and awards from the business community are just too many to name. He has been featured in several publications, Success Magazine, Black Enterprise Magazine. He's appeared on several television programs, Larry King, CNN. He's been in Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, USA Today, and I can go on and on and on about this giant that we're about to have a conversation with today. So first and foremost, we want to thank you, Mr. Kimbrough, for joining us. And, of course, anything you would like to open up with?
Oh, I'm fine. Number one, thanks for having me. Number two, no, I'm ready to go. Just whatever you want to discuss, I'm fine.
Great. Well, for those who may not know you, whenever I'm dealing with individuals who want to be entrepreneurs or who say they want to achieve a certain level of success, I think I once heard Jim Rohn say or ask those who are in the class, have they ever read Think and Grow Rich? So whenever I'm in the midst of those who want to be successful black entrepreneurs, I immediately ask them, have you read Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice by Dennis Kimbrough? And some, to my surprise, have not read the book or have not encountered you in the past. So is there anything that you can give us or a little bit about yourself for those who are not aware of you?
Well, as you know, and I just want to piggyback on what you said, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice was really the last book written by Napoleon Hill. Very few, I shouldn't say very few people, but there are people out there that don't realize that. They said, what is the difference between your book and Dr. Hill's? Well, there isn't any difference. That is Dr. Hill's book. You see, I was going around the country interviewing successful African Americans for a book that I was writing that was tentatively titled What Makes the Great Great. And over the course of my research, I interviewed Earl Graves, the publisher of Black Enterprise magazine. When I got back home from New York, there was a message on my recorder from none other than W. Clement Stone. He left a message. He said, young man, we heard of you. When can you come to Chicago? I'd like to meet you. I returned his call, and about 10 days later, there I am in Chicago, or the suburbs of Chicago, standing in front of this paragon called W. Clement Stone.
Wow.
Now, for your listeners out there who didn't know who W. Clement Stone was, he was Napoleon Hill's personal manager, and he was the Bill Gates of his time. At one time, he was arguably the wealthiest individual in the country. So he says to me, young man, based on what we see in here, we have a proposition for you. And I said, what is that, Mr. Stone? He says, we want you to finish, update, and complete a book. And I said, what book? And when I asked that question, W. Clement Stone reached across his credenza, pulled out the last 100 written pages of Napoleon Hill, and dropped it in my lap. And he said, this book. And I, thumbed through it, and there were no chapter headings. It was like 100 pages on a number of subjects. And I said to him, I said, I can't do this. I'm honored, but I can't do this. He said, why not? And I said, I'm working on a book of my own. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, if you have any sense, push your book aside and finish this. At the time of his death, Napoleon Hill was attempting to write a black version of his all-time classic. He got 100 pages into the manuscript, died of a stroke. He was 84 years old. And W. Clement Stone held onto those pages for 16 years. If Napoleon Hill would have lived 1 year longer, what became of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice coming out in 91, 92 would have come out in 71, 72.
Wow.
So that's my history, and that's why both of our names appear on the cover of that book.
Wow, that is a wonderful story. Question for you. You said that you were writing What Makes the Great Great, which in itself is a wonderful book. You pretty much has given us the motivation as to what you were doing at the time. But what inspired you to take on that task of writing a book such as What Makes the Great Great, and then, of course, going on to do Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice?
Well, I'd looked at wealth and poverty in terms of my education. particularly my dissertation at Northwestern. I was looking at wealth and poverty among underdeveloped African countries. And when I finished, I knew I didn't want to examine that subject anymore, but I was still enamored with wealth and poverty. And I said to myself, being a little bit cathartic and introspective, you know, why don't you look at wealth and poverty among individuals, particularly African Americans in this country? So I just went around the country. I developed a 3-page questionnaire, and I went around the country and I said, well, let me interview those who have some semblance of success. At that particular time, the John Johnsons, the Earl Graves of the world, particularly entrepreneurs. Though, but what makes a great, I expanded it to all domains. I looked at Olympic athletes. I looked at corporate climbers. I looked at people who had carved their name on the tablet of success. So it was in that that type of audience and that type of framework that I began to examine a host of questions. You know, the remarkable thing about these individuals is that they're unremarkable. They just use the same traits, keys, qualities over and over again. So in What Makes a Great Great, I found 9 criteria for greatness, 9 virtues of greatness. If you read Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, you'll see 12 different issues or certainly skill sets that these men and women had in common. The bottom line, anybody can use those skill sets to place themselves, himself, herself, on the fast track of success. At the time, it was very rarely spoke about. You know, I don't pat myself on the back or I say I'm different and unique, but that arguably was one of the first books out there that, you know, let Black America know that you don't have to be a victim. You can certainly be a victor regardless of the field that you're in.
Wow, that is a wonderful story. And I'm just blown back by the what motivates you. When I read your stuff, I read that this is a man on a mission. And so when you mentioned that you wanted to look at the wealth and poverty and then specifically go after Black America to show them that these laws and these principles are available to everyone, I'm just intrigued by your mission to do that and to crisscross the country and do that. So what was it that got you started as an entrepreneur?
Well, I mean, that's basically what I did. And when you interview one of these individuals, that thought certainly stoked the fire for you to go on and interview somebody else. I knew, because these folks didn't know me from Adam, that I had to get, you know, the biggest man or the woman on the block. So what I did, I tried my best at the time to go after John Johnson of Ebony Magazine. And it took me more than 2 years to get John Johnson. It took me more than 2 years to get Ben Carson, arguably the greatest neurosurgeon in this country.
Yes, sir.
But when, you know, I was persistent, I was diligent, I was ambitious, because when I told people what I was doing, they said, oh, my God, you're doing that. but, I mean, regardless, it was a 7-year ordeal, and I was naive because I thought it would take me no longer than 18 months.
Wow.
And when I say 7 years, I mean 7 years of financial hell and high water. I mean, this was a full-time proposition. Yeah, I was working in corporate America at the time, but after about the 3rd year in corporate America, I mean, these folks, if they gave you the interview, sometimes you had to go the next day. You couldn't say that you had a meeting with your boss, so you had to do ABC, XYZ, 1, 2, 3. When these individuals called, I mean, you had a choice, either go get the interview or, you know, keep a roof over your head.
Wow.
And so I decided to go get the interview. And I initially started out with 50 individuals. When that initial list that I had, I was going to interview these 50. Well, that initial list grew from 50 to 100, from 100 to 150. And I quit counting at 150 interviews. But I like to tell people I got a chance to meet and sit down with all of them, everybody from Condoleezza Rice to T.D. Jakes.
Man. That is wonderful. And, I mean, you mentioned something there that really strikes a chord with me, because I know in my endeavors in trying to start howtobeablackentrepreneur.com and give insight as to the realities of entrepreneurship, when you just mentioned the financial hardships that you had to address as you were striving to get these interviews, that kind of leads into my next question, which was, what were the problems? We know that financing or financial hardships come about, but what were some of the other problems that you faced?
Well, I mean, you're going to be bombarded with 50 million different challenges,
right?
50 million different roadblocks, okay? Money is only going to be one of them.
Right.
When you talk about entrepreneurship in the Black community, I mean, we as African Americans, we don't even, you know, we don't even pursue entrepreneurship as a viable career option. You have 33.4 million African Americans in the United States, and only 3%, you know, run and operate their own business. And when you look at these 3%, I wouldn't dare call all 3% entrepreneurs. See, when you discuss entrepreneurship, that, you know, I mean, you're going to discuss and you're going to take part in the five different levels of owning and operating a business. The majority of these people that we call black entrepreneurs, they don't even do that. All they want to do is, number one, keep a roof over their head, two, put food on the table, and number three, get the clothes off the cleaners.
Right.
That's not entrepreneurship. Just because you own a mom-and-pop hamburger stand doesn't mean you're an entrepreneur. But if you own, you know, several McDonald's, you're an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so we don't even look. We don't even examine. We're not even attracted to entrepreneurship as a viable career option. So, number one, that's the bottom line. No matter who I interviewed, I found four common chords in all these men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, they dream big dreams. They had a dream, a passion, something they desperately wanted to accomplish in life. They didn't get into this business to make a killing, to corner the market, to make a whole bunch of money. No, they worked extremely hard, and over the years of working hard, they finally lifted up their eyes. And you know what they found? They found that they were standing in a pool of liquid gold.
Wow.
You know, in other words, as the Bible says, do these things, and then, you know, success will be added unto you.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they went the extra mile. They kept their shoulder to the wheel. They stayed focused. Number two, they were inner-directed versus outer-directed. In other words, they weren't so quick to believe well-meaning friends or family members who said, you can't do this, you can't do that. They walked to a beat of a different drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the old poet Robert Frost was so apropos when he wrote years ago, two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by. In other words, you're unique. You can't succeed being like everybody else. You must take the lonely road.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, differentiation is the key.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks to differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
Differentiation is the key. Right now, there are 21 different ways to market or sell a product or service. 21.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is word of mouth. Number 21 is TV. You know, number 21 is internet. Number 20 is TV. 19 is radio. 18 magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So what's so different and unique about your product or service? What's so different and unique about you?
Right.
I mean, you walk into any Food Lion, you walk into any A&P, you walk into any Kroger, you walk into any Publix, and go down the breakfast cereal aisle. Right now, between Kellogg's and Post, they produce 20 different variations of breakfast cereal.
Right.
From Fruit Loops to Cocoa Puffs, from Raisin Bran to Special K. Last year's marketing operating budget, $1.5 billion to differentiate all those breakfast cereals.
Wow.
Right now, General Motors manufactures 33 different automobiles, from the Buick Sabre to the Hummer.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's marketing budget to differentiate all those 33 different automobiles, $2.5 billion. So you're an entrepreneur. You know, mm-hmm. Why does the marketplace need another source of supply? You're not the only one out there making hamburgers. You're not the only one out there making the widget. Why does the marketplace need you?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, describe your business in 10 words or less. Describe your business in 5 words or less. Describe your business in 1 word. What is your unique selling proposition?
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, they dedicate themselves to lifelong learning. I mean, the information is there. One of these things that entrepreneurs, one of the qualities that entrepreneurs had in common, they always seek out new information. In other words, they're very particular who they allow in their circle. So who's in your circle? I'm speaking rhetorically now. Who is in your circle? See, you can't be the sharpest one in your group. If you're the sharpest one in your group, you can't grow.
Mm-hmm.
And when you stop growing, you begin to die. So who's in your circle? Who's making you feel stupid?
Mm-hmm.
Who's making you feel like a jerk? Who's making you feel like an idiot? Who is compelling you to go out, get the book, buy the book, read the book, apply the book, highlight the book, use everything in the book that you could, you know, that you've read, put it in action. You better pray that somebody in your group is compelling you to do that. If not, you're dead.
Mm.
I mean, Bill Gates is the wealthiest individual in the world, right? He's not going to bring anybody in the circle that can't add to him.
Right.
He's, what, $44, $50 billion? You do the math.
Right.
That's $100 million a day. That's $4 million an hour. That's $67,000 to $70,000 a second. He's not going to waste his time with somebody that, who do you think is going to allow in his circle? Somebody that can help him go forward.
Right.
But what do? We do the same thing over and over again. Not these entrepreneurs. They know. They know the two greatest days of your life. Number one, the day you were born. And number two, the day you know why. Mm. And then last but not least, these men and women flat out refuse to fail. I'm not saying they didn't fail. Many of them actually failed the way to success, but failure was never a viable option for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are.
Those four, that is worth anyone attempting to become an entrepreneur. I mean, I don't think you can learn those traits through any textbook. It takes someone who's gone out to interview those and really see the inner workings of an entrepreneur to find out that these are most important traits that you must have.
Well, that's what I found over and over again.
Over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. If you were to give to these subscribers, we have new entrepreneurs, and then we have some who are established and somewhat struggling in their businesses. But if you were to advise a new entrepreneur, someone who is just starting, what would be the first step that they should take or want to take to become a successful entrepreneur?
Well, number one, not every idea is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you got to be critically clear on what you're trying to do. Make sure that your vision is crystal clear, and you've got to ask yourself some hard charging questions. One of them I already asked. And why does the marketplace need another supply? Need another source of supply? And who are you to bring this market to bear? So you've got to be crystal clear on what you're trying to do. Who's your customer?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to tell me who's your customer in terms of all the graphics, demographics. Give me the age, race, sex, income of your customer. Psychographics, why does your customer buy from you? Geographics, is your customer located in New York? Is your customer located in Miami? Is your customer located in Houston? Is your customer located in Minneapolis? Is your customer located in Seattle? Is your customer located in L.A., Santa Barbara? So, I mean, once you tell me who's your customer, tell me who's your non-customer.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, who are the individuals who currently aren't using your product or service, but would use your product or service in the future if you made the slightest change or modification to?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have all the black women who read Essence magazine? Or would you rather have all the black women who read Red Book, McCall's, Cosmopolitan, and Oprah magazine?
Yes.
So that's crystal clear. Yeah. These are all magazines that continue to take theirs to the next level by expanding on something that Essence created in 69 and 70.
Mm-hmm. I find that what you're saying, Dr. Kimbrough, is so intriguing because based upon that, it's not an insurmountable task, but when you give all of these things that a person should consider, the demographics, your target market, what books do they read, that is a lot. That turns a lot of individuals off from even wanting to pursue entrepreneurship.
Yeah. I mean, entrepreneurship is dirty work. Entrepreneurship is not easy.
Never heard of
that. I mean, if it were easy, everybody would be doing it.
Right. Yes, sir.
But one thing about entrepreneurship, it is it's critically fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you discover your gifts, when you have discovered your area of excellence, and how do you discover your area of excellence? You ask yourself four critical questions. Question number one, what do I love to do?
Mm-hmm.
What do I have a passion for? What can I throw my whole heart and soul into? Question number two, what would I do for free?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if no one ever paid me a dime, if no one ever gave me financial reward for my efforts, what would I do for free? Because if you're doing what you love to do and you do it for free, your work is your play.
Mm-hmm.
And if your work is your play, you'll never work a day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Question number three, what comes easy to you but difficult to somebody else? In other words, what is your area of unfair competitive advantage?
Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, if you can't answer these questions openly and honestly, go to those people who you respect and admire and ask them, what do you see me as? What do you think I would be good at doing? Sooner or later in life, you got to do that. sooner or later in life, you've got to do that.
Right. Wow, those are very powerful words. Based upon today's economy and the things that are going on, how important is it for you gave us some startling numbers at the beginning, but how important is it for the black community to embrace entrepreneurship as a means of not just making money, as you mentioned earlier, but almost as a means of survival? How important is
it? Well, it's critically important, mm-hmm. because when you examine wealth, I mean, this is as far as the train is going. I mean, if we want to reach our destination, we have to walk from here. And when you look at, particularly in wealth creation in black America, I mean, there's so much pathology, the numbers are staggering. Mm-hmm. Do you know that 32% of African Americans don't even save at all?
Right.
Do you know that 28% of African Americans spend more on a weekly basis than they bring in? Do you know only one out of every ten African Americans is in the 401k, stock market, money market, mutual funds? These are wealth-bearing assets,
mm-hmm.
and we don't even participate. I mean, we're not even at the party.
Right.
So all you got to do is look at the data. And don't tell me that white America leads the parade, because white America doesn't lead the parade. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at wealth and wealth creation, I mean, Asians lead the parade. I mean, the average Asian household is $63,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whites come in second. I mean, whites come in second. They're about, what, 53, 54, 55?
Mm-hmm.
Hispanics come in third, about 44, 45. And black America, 29,000.
Wow.
So we don't even pursue entrepreneurship. We don't even look at it. I mean, we're in a heavyweight fight,
mm-hmm.
and we're precariously close with the referee, you know, going our mouth, pulling out the mouthpiece, and waving this fight over with.
Saying it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The day that I graduated from high school in June 1968, 72% of my race and 72% of my generation finished high school with me. I'm 56 years old. You know what it was last year? 50%.
50%.
We don't even finish high school.
Wow.
We don't even finish high school. I mean, 29% of 29% of Americans have a college degree, only compared to 13% of African Americans. I mean, we say that education is a priority, but we don't act it.
Absolutely.
Every 90 seconds of the day, a black child is born to a teen mother.
Mm-hmm.
Every 90 seconds of the day, a black child is born to a teen mother who will not finish high school. Every 4 minutes of the day, a black male is suspended in school. Every 40 minutes of the day, a black male is convicted of a violent crime. So, I mean, those are the numbers.
Right.
And the book that I'm working on now, Have Versus Have Not, where I'm surveying black millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can tell you anything and everything you want to know about a black millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the average black millionaire gets up between 5 and 5:30 every morning, calls it a day at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Average black millionaire owns two cars. If one of them is not a Mercedes, the other one's going to be a Lexus, and the other one's going to be General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
Average black millionaire goes to church twice a week, Sunday service, and either Wednesday night Bible study or one auxiliary meeting during the week.
Mm-hmm.
Black females tithe. Black males give 10 to 12% of their money to charity. And the church that they attend, less than 2,000 members.
Mm-hmm. So no mega churches.
No mega churches for them. Oh. If you want to be a black millionaire, this is the surefire principle to be a black millionaire. You ready?
Yes.
Earn $100,000 by age 30.
Wow. Now that
make sure your annual income is six figures by age 30.
Now that could be
almost
scary for those who are.
Yep.
That could be scary for those who are over the age of 30.
I mean, there you are right there. That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Wow.
I mean, 27%, more than one out of four are Harvard MBAs are millionaires. What's a surefire principle in the black community? There it is, six-figure income by age 30. You do that, and you are well on your way.
Well, what would you say to those who are over the age of 30 who's... And that's
well, I mean, what I have found in my research today, I have found what is called a calculus of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have, you know, developed... when I say a calculus of consumption, if the independent variable is time, I know how the have looks at it and the have not. The title of the book is Have Versus Have Not, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Do Not. So, for example, if the independent variable is time, a have not will look at time from present to the past. But the have always looks in the future. If the independent variable is family unit, the have not, matriarchal. The have, patriarchal to legacy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're a Johnson, your last name is Johnson, your grandfather succeeded, your father succeeded, you have got to measure up. That's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
If the independent variable is education, the have not looks at education from K through 12, but the have looks at education as lifelong. If the independent variable is driving force, the have not, I'm just trying to survive. Survival. I'm just living day to day. But the have, achievement. So, I mean, there you are, in a nutshell. If the independent variable is money, and you listen to me, if the independent variable is money, the have not looks at money as act rich, spend it, consume it. But the have, act poor, conserve it, save it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't mention anything about race. I didn't mention anything about age. I didn't mention anything about startup capital.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is change your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from millionaires. I ask them 118 questions. No athletes, no entertainers, men and women that you just pass in the street.
Right.
That you wouldn't give the time of day to. Like I said, the remarkable thing about black millionaires, they're unremarkable.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I hear you saying, Dr. Kimbrough, is that we are in need of a serious paradigm shift.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, number one, you got to have the leadership. And we don't have the leadership in the black community right now. We don't have the leadership. You got to have the leadership.
Now,
it's lacking.
Well, we've normally had our leadership come up through, I guess, the churches and different civic organizations. With this new paradigm shift, where would we look, or where do you foresee this type of leadership coming up from?
Well, you can learn from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn from anybody. The fact of the matter is, don't focus so much on the individual as you focus on the principles.
Right.
I mean, that's I mean, just like Hansel and Gretel in the forest,
right.
Just follow the breadcrumbs.
Right.
Not so much the individual as the actions. As the action, and that's what's critical.
You know, that's one of the principles that I try to, as I've started to send out the messages to my subscribers with the easing, one of the things that I really stress is that we have to learn from those who have walked the path before us. I think we have a tendency to, when we see successful people, almost run and try to outdo them in a different way instead of following those principles or those footsteps that you just mentioned, those crumbs, those breadcrumbs to get to that type of success.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see that change, or is it possible for the institutions in the urban communities to give us those type of examples or that type of thinking to where we would gravitate towards those who are successful without being jealous?
Yeah, it needs to start with our institutions. And the number one institution is the family unit.
Okay.
The quickest way to wealth is marriage plus savings. That is the quickest way to wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the good news. The bottom news is when we look at our marriage numbers, when I look at our numbers that, you know, enter into marriage, I mean, of course, just like anything else, we're lacking again.
Right.
55% of the country marries. Black America, 24%.
Right.
Why? Because, you know, what our view of manhood, what our young males think of manhood, is certainly lacking and certainly runs counter to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we see our images of BET, we see our images on television, we hear them on the radio, and the things that's got nothing to do with what our, you know, really where our institutions are headed and where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
So number one is the family unit. Number two, the education system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in this day, unbelievable. In this day, I mean, we need to build up our educational, our institutions. I mean, you have what, 100 historically black colleges and universities?
Mm-hmm.
And only one, Spelman College, is what they call competitive,
right?
Or more competitive, I should say,
right?
That. So those are particular areas that we have to concentrate in on.
Well, I mean, that's just, it's very inspiring at the same time, because I think that individuals such as yourself, and I love what George Frazier and a few others are doing, if we can find a way. Because I don't believe the educational system, the traditional educational system, is going to provide these type of examples, for one, nor the curriculum or the inspiration to mm-hmm. expand our minds the way that you're saying. So there really has to be a different way that we educate each other in the black community. Would you kind of expound on that? How? What type of means? I like seminars.
Well, I mean, again, going back to principles, and when you dialogue in education, it's very simple. RIE, number one, relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's foster relationships between administration and faculty, relationship between faculty and students. Okay, so number one, foster relationships. Number two, insistence. No, you insist this is the way it's going to be done. You tell your students the only reason why you can see far is because you're standing on somebody's shoulders.
Right.
And then last but not least, expectation. You expect and demand the best.
Right.
See, people don't get in life what they want. People get in life what they expect.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be wealthy, but they expect to be poor. People
right.
want, you know, to have a nice circle of friends, but they expect to be friendless.
Mm-hmm. And that is so important, the expectations.
Oh, yeah.
As you mentioned it, I look in the I asked one young man the other day what is it that he wants out of life. And this gentleman, I mean, he's not even 18, and he appeared to have a death wish that he knew that he was going to die before he's 21. What's the use of studying this or reading that? Because I'm not going to live that long. The expectation is very limited in the black community. How do we raise that bar? What is it that we can do immediately?
Well, there's certainly a crisis between black males and the rest of the country and the rest of society. Okay, if you weigh 325 pounds and you're 5'10", and your blood pressure is 190 over 140.
Right.
And your cholesterol is in excess of 275. And you smoke a pack a day, a pack of cigarettes a day, and you haven't exercised in years. And I approach you, and I said, hey, it's the first of the year. I'll tell you what, let's join this gym and join Weight Watchers. And you reply, your retort is, I don't need that. Yeah, I'm in good shape. I don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say? You would say that you're in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, here you have a subset of individuals, all males, and they happen to be black males, and they're 6% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 6%, they're responsible for 50% of all violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that in the year 2005, FBI crime statistics, there were about 14,725 murders in 2005?
Wow.
And of those 14,725 murders, 50% were committed by black males.
Mm-hmm.
7,300 and some odd murders in 2005 were committed by black males. And of those 7,300 and some odd that were committed by black males, 91% involved a black victim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of those 7,000 plus murders committed by black males, according to Columbia University History Department, that's more than 150 years, more than all the blacks that died in 150 years in slavery.
Mm.
Now, when I approach you and said, you know, we got to do something about the mental health of black males, and you tell me we're fine, or you do nothing. Just like the first analogy that I gave you with the overweight, smoking, chain smoking, blah, 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 you're in denial.
Right.
Our mental health is not where it should be. Because when I interviewed, when I spoke to Alvin Passant, and I said, Dr. Passant, I said, what is greatness? What is success? He said, black America will never be great until it begins to take care of its children.
Right.
I got to run, my brother.
No, I really appreciate the time. Is there any closing statements or remarks that you would like?
No, I mean, the key characteristic that they all had finally is believe. You believe in yourself when no one else will. Only you keep score.
Right. Well, I want to thank you once again, Dr. Kimbrough. It's been an honor and a privilege, and I look forward to talking to you again, hopefully real soon.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.